Okay, let's unpack this. What if this constant stream of thoughts in your head, what if it isn't just noise?
Right.
What if it's actually a powerful kind of dynamic dimension all on its own, a place that doesn't just reflect reality, but, well, actively shapes it?
That's the extraordinary idea right at the heart of this deep dive. Welcome.
And this exploration, it's built specifically on that fascinating stack of source material you shared with us.
Yeah.
It offers a really unique perspective on the power of thoughts, you know, how they function, where they might come
The
from.
profound influence they seem to have both on our inner lives and potentially the world around us.
So our mission here is to really dive into your sources, pull out the most important nuggets of knowledge, and try to understand what it actually means to harness this power. It's kind of a shortcut, really, to getting informed on a topic that, let's face it, touches everyone.
Definitely. So, where do we even start with this idea? Thoughts forming their own dimension. How does the source explain that? Well, your source material kicks right off with that premise. It suggests thoughts exist in a way that's quite similar to feelings, actually.
Okay.
They're not just static data points, they're dynamic,
Yay.
alive almost.
And they're not always something we consciously choose, are they? Like they just pop up.
Precisely. Just like feelings, they can arise from deep within us, our inner processes, our conditioning, or they can be triggered by something outside, an event, something someone says, reaching us from the external world.
Right.
The source paints this really vivid picture. It describes thoughts swimming like fish through the sea of our consciousness.
Huh, I like that. Swimming like fish, so they're not always neatly lined up. Maybe a bit wild.
Yeah, exactly. The source notes they can feel much faster, more independent than feelings sometimes. They might form swarms or, coalesce into specific inner images. And while they operate somewhat independently, the source emphasizes they can absolutely link up with our feelings,
Oh, so.
often based on our ingrained patterns. Our conditioning and just our current emotional state, they influence each other.
And this isn't purely an internal thing. It affects things outside us.
Not according to your sources, no.
Yeah.
They state pretty clearly that thoughts, whether on their own or linked with feelings or guided by our will, they can have tangible effects.
Tangible
Yeah,
effects.
both in our inner world and our outer world.
Okay, this is where it gets really compelling for me. How do thoughts directly impact our reality? What examples does the material give?
Well, the sources offer some pretty striking illustrations. Think about this one. The exact same external situation,
Okay.
the same person, even. It can either send your stress levels through the roof or fill you with delight.
Right. I get
The
the.
difference, it's purely how you think about it. Your interpretation, your thought about it creates your experience.
That makes sense. We can all relate to that. You know, changing your perspective changes how you feel inside.
But the sources suggest it goes beyond just your internal state. They propose that the way you think about another person can subtly, or maybe not so subtly, influence their attitude and behavior towards you.
Serial
It's like
Wow.
your thought field, the energy of your thought, is interacting with theirs. That's the implication.
So it's not just my internal reaction, it might be influencing the interaction itself. That's a pretty big idea.
It is, and it leads right into those really powerful examples your source includes, like the placebo effect. This isn't just wishful thinking, right? It's a documented phenomenon where belief, a specific thought or expectation, triggers real, measurable healing responses in the body.
The mind actually changing the body.
Directly. And the flip side is also true.
Unfortunately, yes, according to the source. A negative attitude towards illness or persistent self-doubt can apparently promote disease-causing chemical reactions in the brain in our metabolism. It really highlights this direct biochemical link the sources see between our internal thought processes and our physical state. So thoughts are far from passive, they're active shapers.
Okay, but why do we have this complex machinery in the first place? What's the source's take on the fundamental purpose of thinking?
The sources outline several key functions. They're necessary for our personal development, obviously, for solving problems,
Sure.
for learning from our past experiences, and also for preparing for the future. Thinking helps us plan.
Right.
And they're also crucial for self-awareness, for understanding ourselves, and for allowing us to function effectively as individuals within a community.
And speaking of community, the source really emphasizes how much our thinking is shaped by the collective, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Our personal thinking style is deeply influenced by the dominant way of thinking in our community, our culture. Your source even mentions how you might characterize whole communities by their prevailing thought orientations. you know, maybe more rational or pleasure-oriented or profit-oriented.
And here's a key insight from the material. Certain groups within society often benefit from and subtly influence these prevailing ways of thinking.
How so?
Sometimes even unconsciously perpetuating them because it serves certain interests.
So thinking isn't just individual, it's also the societal construct with its own momentum. And that's where the downside comes in.
Exactly. The sources warn that both personal and societal ways of thinking can become self-perpetuating. Almost like they develop a life of their own, spinning off in a certain direction.
Okay.
And they raise a really serious concern that this self-perpetuating, often unconscious mode of thinking, especially when combined with our technological power, well, it's leading us towards a self-destructive path.
You mean like the examples of climate change and environmental destruction the source points to?
Precisely. The sources see these as direct consequences of a certain collective mindset, a way of thinking.
Wow.
And they use the Corona pandemic as a recent, really stark example of how quickly an external event can dramatically shift our collective and individual inner world.
How we all started thinking and feeling differently.
Yeah, how we absorbed fears, how other concerns just faded into the background, how simple actions like wearing masks became totally normal, and how we could even start to see other people, you know, people who came too close, as a potential threat. It's a powerful illustration of this external shaping force on our thoughts.
Given how much our thoughts seem influenced by everything around us, how much is our reality genuinely our creation then, according to the source?
Your sources make a strong case that each person is, in fact, constantly building their own version of reality.
My own version.
Yeah. This internal picture of the world, it's constructed from our unique blend of thoughts, feelings, perceptions. And usually, we place our self, our ego, right at the center of it all.
Right. The world revolves around me, sort of. Yeah. What factors influence this personal construction?
The sources list several key ones.
Mm-hmm.
Our family and societal conditioning, definitely. Our current physical state, if we're tired or sick. Our psychological state.
Mm-hmm.
And importantly, our level of consciousness. How aware are we?
And consciousness itself plays a direct role in this construction.
Yes, this is a really key insight. The sources suggest that consciousness largely creates its own sense of freedom or limitation.
Creates it?
Yeah. It creates its own desires or prohibitions, its own joy or sorrow, its own problems or fears. It's not just passively observing the world, it's actively constructing these internal states through thought and interpretation.
And the impact of this internal construction, can it be more powerful than external reality sometimes?
That's a fascinating point the sources raise. They note that an intense internal imagination.
Like daydreaming.
Kind of, but maybe more focused. Vividly picturing a dream holiday or maybe a feared failure or a desired success. The sources say this internal picture can sometimes have a stronger effect on our inner landscape.
Stronger than what?
Than a real life experience that we perceive only superficially. Without much attention or feeling.
So what we hold intensely in our mind's eye can be more impactful than fleeting external events.
According to your sources, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And they go a step further. They suggest that our deeply held inner views and interpretations of external events can even subtly influence those events.
Influence the events themselves.
Sometimes even before we've turned those thoughts into words or actions. That's the idea.
Okay, let's delve a bit deeper then into where all these thoughts and feelings are coming from. The sources talk about the unconscious and this sea of consciousness again.
Right. They highlight this remarkable, often overlooked, ability of our unconscious mind. It can frequently read the thoughts and feelings of others. Mm. You know, picking up on subtle cues, affection, fear, doubt, expectation.
Without words.
Often without a single word being spoken. It's that gut feeling, that intuition.
And this is happening constantly. Under the surface.
Yes. And the sources note that often, unconsciously, we actually start to adjust our actions or behavior.
Oh.
To meet these perceived expectations, maybe from others, maybe from society in general.
Yeah.
Even if we don't intend to, we subtly conform.
That's a powerful kind of hidden influence then. Can we break free from that automatic adjustment?
The sources offer hope here. They suggest that if we consciously give space to this unconscious perception, if we pay attention to those gut feelings, we can potentially gain more freedom in our own thinking, feeling, and acting rather than just being unconsciously driven by those external cues.
Okay. So putting this all together, where are all these diverse thoughts and feelings ultimately generated? What's the summary?
Your sources point to multiple origins. They can be triggered by the state of our physical body, right? Hunger, pain, pleasure, its desires, by memories of the past or worries about the future, by our hopes and fears, and as we discussed, by external events and influences, what people say, what happens around us.
Right.
And then layered on top of all this, we're also consciously or unconsciously absorbing the zeitgeist, the spirit of the times, political messages, media narratives, economic pressures, even fashion trends. It all feeds in.
And what about those thoughts that seem to come from, I don't know, an even deeper place, not just reactions?
Ah, yes. The sources use a great analogy for those. They describe thoughts and feelings arising under pressure from the unconscious depths.
Like
gas bubbles forming deep within the Earth's interior.
Okay.
As they ascend to the surface of our sea of consciousness, they grow, and they can create powerful waves that significantly and often unconsciously influence our surface-level thinking, feeling, and acting.
So the state of that sea, the surface, matters immensely for clarity. If it's choppy versus calm.
Fundamentally, this is a crucial point from your sources. They state that the quieter and clearer the surface of this sea of consciousness, the more accurately it can reflect external reality, like a still lake reflects the sky.
Got it.
It also allows us to see deeper into our own inner world, to understand the true origin of our thoughts and feelings more clearly. And crucially, it makes it easier for genuine insights from what the sources call the depth of being to rise up and form powerful ideas, not just random bubbles, but real insights.
This connects with why people seeking deep insight, you know, artists, meditators, writers, often crave stillness, quiet places.
Exactly. They're instinctively seeking that calm surface where deeper truths or creative impulses can emerge without distortion.
Mm-hmm.
Your sources contrast a weak, uncontrolled thought impulse, those restless bubbles, with a powerful idea.
What makes an idea powerful in this sense?
An idea that truly comes from that inner depth, especially if it's accompanied by strong, aligned emotion. Well, that has the potential to open new horizons, to deeply resonate with others.
Okay.
And to have significant effects on our body and even the external world.
For good or ill, I suppose.
Right. The sources give examples like the fear of illness or persistent self-doubt. Those can manifest destructively, hindering health or goals.
Mm.
Conversely, inner confidence arising from that depth can facilitate healing or success.
And it affects our environment, too.
And they also note that a state of unconcentrated or sort of disordered thought waves constantly impacts our actions. And even our immediate environment may be making us clumsy or unfocused.
Right.
A state of inner peace, according to the sources, has a palpable, positive effect on our surroundings. People can feel it.
So thoughts, they can ground us firmly in the present moment. Or they can completely pull us away from it.
That's the core tension your sources highlight, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts can either connect us fully to the here and now, allowing us to experience it deeply,
mm-hmm.
or they can separate us, trapping us in mental loops about the past, anxieties about the future, lost in thought.
The sources talk about the joy of pure perception. What does that mean exactly?
It's this idea that if we can just experience the simple act of perceiving reality, just seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, without the constant overlay of commentary and analysis from our thoughts, our thoughts themselves and even our sense of self will start to recognize the value in that quiet presence. They'll sort of willingly follow the path toward this freedom and depth found in just being present.
And the sources stress this isn't about sacrificing anything valuable like planning or learning.
No, not at all. It's about experiencing life more fully, more richly.
So instead of being lost in thought,
we can learn to guide our thoughts.
Yeah.
Your sources use another really beautiful analogy here. They describe thoughts transformed into the silent but powerful wings of an eagle.
Wings of an eagle.
Yeah. Watchful, effortlessly carried by life's currents when appropriate, or capable of focusing rapidly and precisely on a goal when needed. Agile and directed.
And that ultimate goal, it's found in the present moment itself.
Yes. The sources suggest we can direct this flight into the now, to truly appreciate the gifts life offers in this moment.
Like what?
To connect deeply with others, with our environment, with our own body, with the earth itself. They even state that the wise person, even when experiencing darkness or difficulty, knows how to find gratitude in the present breath, the fact of being alive right now.
This sounds wonderful, but it definitely sounds like it requires deliberate effort, not just understanding it intellectually.
Oh, it absolutely does. Your sources are very, very clear on this point. This capacity for focused, present moment thinking, for accessing deeper insight. It needs training.
Like muscles.
Exactly like our physical muscles. It needs regular practice to develop strength and control.
And can this training involve the body? Is it just mental?
No, the sources emphasize that this training can be particularly effective when done in collaboration with the body.
How?
They mention things like conscious work, focused physical activity, bodywork practices like yoga, qigong, or brahma, conscious perception exercises, devotion, meditation. All these practices can help train the mind through the body.
And they give specific examples too, like in therapy.
Yes, they give some powerful examples from therapeutic settings, like using focused thought and autogenic training, or directing thoughts to help release old emotional scars held in the body.
Tell me more about that scar example from the sources. That sounds intriguing.
Well, the sources describe patients being guided to mentally feel the direction or quality of old emotional or physical scars within their bodies.
Okay.
Through this focused internal attention, this directed thought, they apparently experienced a release of held emotion, sometimes quite strongly.
And physical effects.
Yeah, feelings of warmth spreading, deep relaxation, and in some cases, the sources mention, even the dissolving of related physical issues, like a long-standing pelvic torsion.
Wow, that's a really potent illustration of the mind-body connection your sources are proposing.
It really is.
Okay, so if we commit to this training, this conscious management of our thoughts, what does your source material say becomes possible? What are the key capabilities we can develop?
The sources outline several pretty transformative abilities, actually. You can learn to direct your thoughts consciously, rather than feeling like you're just, you know, subject to whatever pops into your head.
Taking the reins.
Exactly. You can learn to bundle their inherent power and use it deliberately for specific goals. You can also learn to examine the origin of your thoughts. Where did this come from? And understand their deeper link to your feelings.
Which leads to things like pausing before reacting.
Yes, that's a key one. The sources mentioned developing the capacity to pause before acting or speaking, especially when you're tired or feeling emotional. That crucial gap.
Makes sense. What else?
You can also learn to trust your unconscious perception, more those gut feelings about others' thoughts or intentions, and develop the ability to resist unwanted thoughts.
Unwanted thoughts, both our own and others.
Yeah, both your own unhelpful loops like self-pity or maybe overestimation, and potentially resisting external influences or thought patterns you don't want to adopt.
And handling the wandering mind, the constant distraction.
Crucially, yes. You gain the ability to persistently, gently but firmly, bring your thinking back from uncontrolled wandering, back from the past, back from the future, back from those unproductive mental loops. Mm-hmm. And a major capability highlighted is learning to keep your consciousness still and open, creating that calm lake surface we talked about.
Why is that so important?
To allow those valuable impulses, those insights from the depths of the inner and outer unconscious to actually rise and be perceived clearly.
And what does this stillness and control ultimately enable us to do? What are the results?
Well, with what the sources poetically call the tamed horse of our thoughts, we can explore the richness of our inner thought and dream worlds more effectively, more consciously.
Right.
We become more capable of consciously perceiving the beauty and the gifts that are present in the external world and in other people, things we might have overlooked before.
Seeing more.
Yes. Through this finer, more conscious perception, we can uncover hidden wonders that were always there, but we were just too lost in thought to notice.
And connecting beyond the obvious physical world.
Yes. The sources suggest this training can lead to connecting with what they call other levels and their forces. It's a bit mysterious, but implies deeper connections are possible.
Okay.
And perhaps the most profound result mentioned is the ability to continuously merge with the present moment and access the deep stillness, the peace that underlies it all.
This merging, this connection, that brings us to the idea of alignment, doesn't it?
That's right. That's where the sources see immense potential. They propose that aligning our thought, our feeling, and our perception levels.
Aligning them how?
Aligning them to truly perceive the truth, the reality, in the here and now. Not filter through old patterns or future worries, but seeing what is. This alignment, they say, can open us up to what they call a real touch of life.
A touch of life and resonance. What's that about?
When these aligned inner levels, thought, feeling, perception, all present resonate with others.
With other people.
Yes, or even resonate with abstract qualities like beauty, joy, compassion, peace, or love present in a situation or environment, our consciousness can experience itself not as this isolated, separate me, but as a vibrant part of a larger whole, a sense of connection.
It sounds beautiful, truly. But it definitely highlights, again, the need for practical steps. It's not automatic.
Not at all.
And your source material includes specific exercises for this training, right?
It does, thankfully. The sources are clear that this isn't just theoretical. It requires practice, actual training.
Mm-hmm.
They reiterate that most of our thoughts are indeed restless, undirected, consuming energy, and often counterproductive, precisely because they pull us away from the present.
Okay.
So these exercises they provide are concrete ways to start addressing that.
Great. Let's talk about them. The first one is called the wish. How does that work?
Okay, so this exercise from your sources is designed to use focused thought combined with a specific physical action to plant an intention in a deep way into the unconscious.
Planting an intention. Okay.
How? You start by getting into a comfortable position, just settling yourself. Then you visualize a specific concrete goal.
What kind of goal?
Something related to health, perhaps, or a personal or professional aim. The sources say visualize it concretely, like a finished scene or image. But importantly, without trying to generate strong emotion yet, just the clear image.
Got it. Clear image, no forced emotion. And the body connection, you mentioned that.
Yes, this is where the physical action comes in. You place your hands on your abdomen, around the navel area. Then you gently push, or maybe better, direct energy toward your navel in the softest direction you can sense.
Why the navel?
Well, the sources explain this isn't arbitrary. They see the navel area as a key point in the body's fascia system, which they say is deeply connected to the autonomic nervous system and the unconscious mind.
Okay, interesting.
So as you focus your attention on this area, you allow a deep breath to arise naturally. This focused attention combined with the deep breathing is thought to activate the vagus nerve,
mm-hmm.
which the source is linked to sending information directly to the unconscious parts of the brain, setting the stage, basically.
Ah, okay. So you set the stage, connect with the body. Then you make the wish.
Exactly. In the next step, which coincides with an inhalation, you briefly and very concretely imagine your goal already achieved.
Just for a moment.
The sources use the image of a stone falling into a calm lake, a clear, singular impact. Bam. Goal achieved.
Okay. Then what?
Then, as you exhale, you simply observe the effect. You imagine this wish, this image you planted, spreading like a wave from the center of your body.
Spreading out.
Yeah, spreading out into your physical self, through your feelings, and out into what sources call the world of stillness around you, like ripples on the lake.
And the key instruction here is?
Is to just observe. That's the crucial part, according to your sources. Once you've planted the seed with the inhalation and the image, you leave the rest of the process entirely to the unconscious and the stillness.
So no efforting?
No. You don't try to make it happen with conscious effort or planning or more thinking. You just let the wave you've created do its work. You avoid any further conscious activity that might disturb those ripples.
It sounds like a practice of focused intent followed by complete letting go.
Right.
Trusting the process.
Exactly that. Focus planting, then trustful observation.
Okay. What about the second exercise, the training? This one sounds more about cultivating presence more broadly.
That's right. This exercise is about developing the consistent habit of quietening the mind and gently, persistently, guiding your thoughts back to the present moment. It's broken into two parts in your source material.
Okay, part A.
Part A is about building the discipline of shutting down the head, as the sources phrase it. Doing this on a regular basis, especially when you feel mentally tired or scattered.
How do you shut down the head?
You find a comfortable position, settle in, and simply observe your breath and how it affects your body. Just notice the sensations.
Mm-hmm.
The imagery provided here is like sitting by the surface of a calm lake again.
Right.
And your thoughts are just bubbles rising to the surface.
Okay.
You watch where they seem to come from, how they move across the surface, and you simply let them pop and vanish without engaging with them, without following them.
Just letting them go.
Yeah. The practice is to consciously try to extend the phases of stillness that naturally occur between the thoughts, just noticing those gaps and letting them widen.
So witnessing the thoughts without getting swept away by their content.
Exactly. Just pure observation. Part B is a bit more active guidance.
How so?
It's about patiently and persistently training your thoughts, using your willpower, but, and this is important, doing it with a relaxed, loving dedication, not harshly. You apply focused concentration to whatever task is actually in front of you right now. Could be a mental challenge, could be physical activity, could even be simply enjoying music or consciously relaxing.
So bringing focus to the present task.
Right. And if the mind wanders, which it will.
Of course.
You just gently, consistently bring your wandering thoughts back. back to the present moment, back to the task or the experience at hand.
And the sources give practical examples for this.
Yes, several helpful ones, like starting your day, maybe even before getting out of bed, by consciously stretching and really feeling your body.
Mm-hmm.
Or in the shower, imagining the water isn't just cleaning your skin, but is cleansing you internally, mm-hmm. preparing you for, as they put it, the most beautiful and important day.
Mm-hmm.
Setting an intention.
Nice.
If you catch yourself drifting into past regrets or future worries without a clear reason or purpose for doing so,
yeah.
you consciously, deliberately pull your focus back to what you are actually doing or perceiving right now. Feeling your feet on the floor, noticing the sounds around you.
Grounding in the present.
Exactly. And actively making an effort to look for the wonders and gifts around you in the small details of life that we often miss.
Mm-hmm.
Consciously striving to deepen your encounters. Really connect with people when you talk to them. Pay attention to your surroundings. Feel your own body. And notice those moments of inner stillness when they arise.
So it's less about suppressing thoughts altogether and much more about gentle redirection and choosing conscious awareness over automatic pilot.
Precisely. It's an ongoing practice, a training of choosing where you place your mental energy moment by moment.
Okay. So to wrap this up then, we've journeyed through the layers of your source material. Quite a journey, actually.
It has been.
Exploring this powerful idea that thoughts function as their own dimension, how they seem to directly impact our reality, the challenges posed by our often undirected kind of chaotic thinking,
right,
and the incredible potential for clarity, for insight, and for connection that the sources say is unlocked through conscious training and cultivating presence.
It really describes a path laid out in your sources that leads from being potentially controlled by our thought processes to becoming their conscious, skilled director, taking charge in a gentle way.
And it leaves us with a really potent final thought from your source material to maybe just ponder on.
Yeah.
Maybe the path to true freedom and depth in our consciousness isn't really found in acquiring more things or achieving more external control.
But rather, perhaps, in turning inwards, learning to gently tame the often chaotic stream of our own thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing so, rediscovering the profound power of the stillness and maybe just the simple gifts that are already hidden right here within the present moment itself.